Okay, so have a look at the screen. Here's what we're doing. It's going to come up there now. Thanks, Stuart. This is our building campaign. You're going to hear all about it. For the next 3 weeks, we are going to talk about, as Matt said, three things that are the most important to us. Jesus, people, and forever. Eternity. That's what we're going to talk about, and of course we're starting today. And you know, as a church, we often have questions and answers, and we're going to do that today. Today's going to be slightly different. We're not going to take the questions straight after the sermon. We're going to sing, then you're going to see a presentation on the building, and then we'll take questions. So your questions can be about the Bible passage, or they can be about the building. And you know, there's no party line. You are free to ask whatever you want to. Just text them in and don't throw anything, and we'll all be very happy. All right, so let's go to Ephesians chapter 1, verse 7 to verse 10. Now, I hope you don't think I'm overly rude. I don't mean to be rude or offend anyone, but I'm just going to be honest with you. I think Australian politics is boring, very boring. Nothing actually ever happens. And I don't think I'm the only one. So what happens is, at the start of May, Scott Morrison, do you know Scott Morrison? He's the Treasurer of Australia. What he does, he did this about 3 weeks ago, is he unveils the annual budget. Here is the government's plan for Australia. And he stands up, and in 29 minutes and 54 seconds, he gives the budget. And how, you say, how do I know how long he took? Well, it was my exhaustive scientific research. You just look at the bottom of YouTube and it'll tell you how long the whole thing took. Anyway, so the name of his budget is this: Right Choices to Secure Better Days Ahead. That was the name of the budget. This is the government's plan for Australia. This is what it's all about. Then after the budget, up jumps Bill Shorten, give or take 2 or 3 days, and he hits back. And what he says is, no. We've got a better plan for Australia. We'll bring even more bigger tax cuts. And so really, you know, at the end of the day, it's like two fat kids fighting over a cake, really. Australia's this cake, and we're fighting how to slice up and who gets the biggest slice. You know, just like kids at a party bickering. Now, you might think, oh my goodness, that's very critical. Sorry. And it is. I suppose it is. But, you know, as I was reading a couple of opinions and commentaries on the budget, I'm not alone. More and more people are crying out saying there's something missing. What's missing is there's no leadership. There's no plan. It's almost as if Liberal Labour, all politics has become is reactionary. It's about managing the status quo. No one has actually got a plan. Where's this going? What do we want Australia to be in the future? 15 years from now, 20 years from now, or whatever. What do you want Australia to look like? What kind of Australia do you want? And what people are saying is there's no idea. There's no vision. There's no big plan. There's no leadership. There's no big idea. Two fat kids fighting over this plate of cake. And there's a small little smattering of greens on the sideline, you know, trying to introduce hitherto before banned herbs. But anyway, but you know what? Don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. Because here's the thing, forgive me, but Labour, Liberal, it doesn't really change your life much. Actually, it doesn't really change anything. There's nothing that's going to change the world. So here's the question. What will change the world? What will make a difference to your life? Let me put it another way. Is there another plan? Is there another macroeconomic plan? Is there some kind of big idea that's driving everything? Is there? Well, there is, actually. And we've been told what it is. The fact of the matter is, God has got a master plan. God has got this master plan. Let me come to it from a different angle. What's it all about? Really? Really? What's it all about? What is God up to? What's God up to? Do you know why it's carrying on? Why is Monday going to happen? What's going on? What's the big idea? What's the big idea? Would you believe me if I told you that it can be summarized in one word, starting with J? Jesus. It's all about Jesus. It's really all about Jesus. I want to show it to you. Have a look at this. Here's what it is. All God's grace is in Jesus. We're going to see that in our passage. All God's purposes are achieved in Jesus. And all of God's plan is to unite all things in Jesus. I'm going to show it to you. Bottom line, it really is all about Jesus. Do you know why you're alive? It's about Jesus. Do you know why you got up this morning? It's about Jesus. Let me show you. Have a look. First of all God's grace is in Jesus. Have a look at verse 7 and 8. In Jesus, we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished upon us in all wisdom and insight. What we're being told here is that every single blessing, every good thing that God can give you, he gives you in Jesus. Jesus is the full package. Verse 3 to verse 8 of Ephesians, which you don't have in front of you because we don't have time to look at it all. Verse 3 to verse 8 is a long list of all these blessings that God gives us. And we don't have time. But they tell us that every one of those blessings are in Jesus. So look how it starts off. Here's a verse for you. Verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us where? In Christ, with every spiritual blessing. Every blessing God gives you is in Jesus. So in verse 7, we got some examples. Look at verse 7. In Jesus, we have redemption. What's redemption? Redemption's a very specific idea. It's the idea of the slave market, where you buy back a slave. That's where that word redemption comes from. In Jesus, we have redemption. God bought us, in Jesus, God bought us back from slavery. And you say, when was I in slavery? Well, let me remind you. You were in slavery and I was in slavery. We were slaves to our desires. Our wants had us in slavery. People often assume that freedom is about being able to follow your desires. But what happens if your desires are skew? What happens if your wants are twisted? Then freedom is not about chasing your desires or wants. That's slavery. But you can't stop wanting it. The easiest example, which we all know, is alcoholism. And it's in my family, so I know. The last thing you want to give an alcoholic is free will. No alcoholic thinks free will is a good idea. They don't want it because they know their will is broken. You say to an alcoholic, just stop drinking. Just don't do it. And you know what they'll say to you? I can stop drinking. The problem is I don't want to. My want is broken, get it? I don't want to stop. My will is a slave. My desires hold me hostage. Do you know pedophiles? Almost all pedophiles hate themselves. And they think to themselves, I wish I wasn't like this. I wish I didn't like this. I wish I didn't want this. But they're held hostage to what they want. their will has them in slavery. Overweight people. I wish I didn't want food so much. I wish I didn't like eating so much. Lazy people. I wish I didn't love comfort so much. I wish I didn't want to just relax all the time. And I'm picking obvious examples. But you go on and on and on, and soon you'll realize that it's me and it's you. All of us are slaves to our evil desires. Jesus said that. Whoever sins is a slave to sin. We only do what we want. And unfortunately, what we want is broken. And so there we were in this, try and picture it, in this iron cage. That's how we were spiritually. We're in this iron cage of our broken wills. And what are the bars? The bars are our evil desires. The things I want are the very things that hold me captive. And I'm stuck in this cage like a slave. There I am, you know, poor little me. And these bars of my desires have got me stuck. Outside is a big sign that says, for sale. But who will buy me? Who's going to buy us? Who will care enough for people who keep failing? Who will love us who keep doing wrong? Who's going to love us? Who's going to buy us out of slavery? I mean, what value are we? No one buys something that's broken. And we're broken. Who's going to buy us? It's a bad deal. Except God. Can you believe it? He walked past our cage and he looked at us and he was moved with compassion and he bought us. In Jesus, we have redemption. In Jesus, God bought us back. You know, I can't watch any animal movie, okay? I don't watch any animal suffering. I cannot deal with it. My wife will say, but what about the poor people? You know, and I don't care. I just don't want the animal to get hurt, okay? Which is wrong, but there you go. And one of the saddest things you'll ever see, if it comes on TV, I'll quickly flick, boy. You know the animal rights activists, brilliant, brilliant. What they do is they go and buy animals that are living in cages. I don't know if you've seen one of those ads. The reason is because there's no illegality about it. So some poor person, usually in the third world, has this big bear in a cage and they're making money out of the thing. But you can't just go free it because it's not illegal. And so what the animal activists do is they raise money. And then you can buy that animal's freedom. You pay the person who's making a livelihood out of it, and the animal gets to go free and have a free life. And I don't know about you, but I can't see those pictures because you just see that little bear. There's usually a bear, I don't know why, but you just bear and these big brown eyes sitting there in absolute misery. You know, it's heart-wrenching. But I want to say to you, that's a picture of what God did for you and for me. He walked past our cage and he had compassion on us. And he looked at us and he thought, I can't let you carry on like that. I will buy you back. In Jesus, we have redemption. But what did God pay for us? What did God pay? Well, it tells us in verse 7, in him we have redemption through his blood. Wow. Do you know what God paid for you? Can you see how much he loved you? Imagine you're in some third world country and there's a bear and you walk past and oh my goodness, it's so sad. You think, that's it. Where's my wallet? Where's my credit card? I'm going to get that. And you try and haggle because that's what you do in this country. You haggle. I'll give you $100. No, I'll give you $1,000. No, I can't sleep with this bear in this cage. I will never sleep again. You know, and you haggle and you haggle and haggle. In the end, you don't have enough money. Imagine if you say, oh, all right, then you can have my son. And you put your son in the cage and walk off with a bear. I mean, it's a joke. Everyone's like, that's what God did. He loved you so much. On the cross, Jesus Christ swapped places with you. He hung on that cross He spilt his blood so that you can go free. That's how much God loved you. And it's more than that, because look at verse 7. In him we have redemption through his blood. Look at this. The forgiveness of our trespasses. And here's where it becomes so different. Do you know that big teddy face with the sad brown eyes in the cage? Do you know why you feel sorry for him? Why can I handle movies where the guy gets killed, but I'm not allowed to see the animal get hurt? Why? Well, you know. It's because the animal's innocent. The animal didn't do anything wrong. That poor teddy bear. He didn't do anything wrong. He doesn't deserve to be there. That's not like you and me. We deserve to be there. We put ourselves in the cage. Those iron bars are our own evil desires. And God said, don't go in there. And God said, please don't lock yourself in there. And we did. The fact of the matter is, we're not innocent. And yet, he still redeemed us anyway. And he forgave us the sins, the very same sins that put us in the cage in the first place. That's how much he loved us. No wonder it says in verse 7, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished upon us in all wisdom and lavished on. God didn't drip feed you grace. Oh, I hope I get a little bit of grace today. God gave you a little bit of grace. Oh, God gave you a little bit more. God gave you quite a lot. No. He lavished his grace on you. He just poured it out upon you. But the key thing is those first two words in verse 7. In Jesus. All of that grace, every spiritual grace, flows to us in Jesus. Outside of Jesus, there's nothing there. It's all in Jesus. My sister was the first woman to do commercial diamond diving in Namibia. Now, if you don't know Namibia, understandable, it's a long way from here. But Namibia is on the left-hand side of Africa, if you're looking in Africa. And it is hostile. Ooh, it's like this desert place. And next to it is this ice-cold ocean. It's got a current called the Benguela Current, and it upwells from down south Antarctica, and it goes up the left-hand side of Africa at the bottom there. And so it's just treacherous. You've got these howling winds, skeleton coast, big fog banks. The water's black as black because of kelp. And it's called the Skeleton Coast because it's full of skeletons. There's so many shipwrecks along there. Anyway, it's horrible, horrible, horrible. I've been there a couple of times. And here's what happens. There goes my sister. They're out on a little boat. And what they do is they go about a kilometer to 2 kilometers offshore. And they dive. They go into that horrible big sharks as well. And they go down there, and they got this machine, and it's like a vacuum cleaner. And they suck up gravel, and it goes up through a sieve, and they collect diamonds off the floor. Very lucrative. And obviously, when you're sucking, you can now, if you've ever dived, you know, now there's no vis. You're like, might as well close your eyes. You can see nothing. It's horrible. Ice cold. Horrible. Here's what happens. The only way you can stay alive in an environment like that is on the surface is a mate. And this friend of yours, sometimes referred to as a personal Jesus, stands there watching this oxygen going down to you. It's a pipe that's in your mouth, and it pumps air down to you down there. And there's this cord, and if you're ever in trouble and a rock falls on your leg and you're trapped or something's going wrong, you just pull. That person is your link to life. There's no life. There's no life outside that person. Well, it's a picture. God is life. God is light. And we're down here in the cold and the dark. And Jesus Christ is the only one who feeds us with life. Every blessing of God flows to us through Jesus Christ. Outside of him, it's cold, it's dark. If you're not in Jesus, you're not feeding on God's grace. You're not getting the grace that could be coming to you. This is what we do as a church. We want to tell people there's a place. Oh, this is going to rhyme. But anyway, there's a place where you can get grace, and it's Jesus. The people of Perth are in deep water. They're cold. They're dark. They're diving around under every rock, trying to find some bit of treasure. And all the while, they're just holding their breaths. And if you hold your breath for long enough, it starts getting sore. It gets uncomfortable. The oxygen will run out. And we're saying to them, breathe on this. Here is God's grace lavished upon us in Jesus. All God's grace is in Jesus. But that's not all. Number two, all God's purposes are achieved in Jesus. Look at verse 9. Making known to us the mystery of his will, according to his purpose, which he set forth in Christ. It's not just that all God's grace is in Jesus, it's that every purpose of God is achieved in Jesus. Have a look at that phrase. It's quite weird, isn't it? Look at verse 9. Making known to us, look at this phrase, the mystery of his will. What does that mean? Well, in the Bible, a mystery is something you could never have known by yourself. A mystery does not mean something you can't know. It means something you can't know by yourself. It had to be told to you. Like it says there, making known to us the mystery of his will. Who knows what's going on in Scott Morrison's brain? Do you know what's going on in Scott Morrison's brain? Nobody does. You'll never know. It's a mystery. Until that day that he stands up in Parliament and for 29 minutes and 54 seconds, he reads out the budget. He reveals all. You know, it's called a show and tell. Here it is. This is what I've been thinking. This is where we're going. You could never guess what's in his mind until he tells you. How much less can we guess what's in God's mind unless he tells us? But guess what? God has done a show and tell. God has told us. He's revealed it to us. God has read out the budget, his master plan, his big idea. He's told us. And how kind. Look at what it says there in verse 9. Making known to us the mystery of his will according to his purpose. You know, friends, that's very kind of God. He didn't have to tell us. How kind that he did. It's not nice working in a company. Have you worked in a company where you're slaving away long hours, but the boss on the 32nd floor with five secretaries, he doesn't tell you what the company is doing. Oh, what's this company for? I just slave away here, but I don't know what the plan is. That's not nice. Well, imagine being in the army and you're doing your best, but the general won't tell you what the objective is. You're making huge sacrifices. You've lost a toe and half an ear, you know, and you're fighting, but you don't know why you're fighting. What am I fighting for? The general won't tell you. Or imagine being a teenager at high school and everyone says, respect yourself, respect everyone in this classroom, but they don't tell you why. Why must I? No, just be good. Why? Because you must be good. Why must I be good? Because you must be good. Why? After a while, you're breaking bus stops. Because no one can tell you why. What's the big idea? Or imagine living life in Perth, not knowing what it's all about. You know what you're going to have to do? There you are in Sorrento. You don't know what it's all about. Here's what you're going to have to do. Watch lots of TV and go on long holidays so you can push down the emptiness. Because you don't know what it's all about. Or imagine joining a church and you don't know what it's about. You go to a church and they, what are you guys trying to do? What's your plan? And they don't know. God has revealed his purposes to us. God has told us what his plan is. And that plan, look at verse 9, is set forth in Christ. It is in Jesus. Simply put, every single purpose of God is put into effect in Jesus. Jesus is the means by which all God's plans and purposes are achieved. Jesus is the execution of God's plan. Every promise God has ever made finds its fulfillment in Jesus. Every thought that God has ever had is realized or culminates in Jesus. All God's grace is in Jesus. All God's purpose is achieved. And what are you meant to be thinking at this point? What are you meant to be thinking? Okay, Dwayne, so what's the plan? You've told me, so what's the plan? Tell me what this plan is. Well, I'm going to. And that's number three. Here comes the plan. All of God's plan is this. Here comes the budget. Is to unite all things in Jesus. Look at that again. Who feels let down? Dwayne, you were building up to something so big. Is that it? Is that God's plan? It's a bit of a letdown. Well, actually, it's actually pretty spectacular. But I think if you think that, you don't yet understand. So let me explain it to you. Look at verse 10. As a plan, here comes God's plan, for the fullness of time, to unite all things in Jesus. Things in heaven, things on earth. What does that mean? Let me put it to you very simply, and then we'll think about it. God's plan is to fix everything. That's as simple as I can go. God's plan is to fix everything in Jesus. Jesus is not just the means, that's our second point, how God's plan comes about. Our third point is that Jesus is the end. He's the purpose, the point of the plan. So let me explain. The world is broken. Now, do you all accept that? Do I have to prove to you that the world is broken? Surely I don't. You know, it's broken. It ain't what it's supposed to be. We all know something is missing. We feel it. Something is missing. We know it shouldn't be like this. Something is missing. Let me try and illustrate this. Have you ever met someone who's really upset because they didn't have three eyes? Have you ever met someone like that? You can find someone and say, oh, something's missing. No, I just feel that I should have another eye over here. If I, you know, I feel I'm missing out because I don't have three eyes. You know, that's never going to happen. But if you meet someone who's lost one eye, wow, you'll find someone who's disappointed. I should have two, but one's missing. That's just, if you meet someone who's blind and lost both eyes, well, they're inconsolable. It's a tragedy. Now, it's the same way that we know something's missing. We know that we ought to have had something, which is why we're upset, and we don't have it. People are not unhappy because they don't have food. People are not unhappy because they don't have shelter. I know people who've got shelter and are unhappy. I know people who've got food and are unhappy. People with two eyes. Can you believe this? There are people with two eyes who are unhappy. What's missing? What should we have had that we don't have? And the answer is unity with God. That's what we don't have. That's what's missing. We're out of sync with God. And it's missing. It's missing in our lives. And because we're out of sync with God, we're out of sync with the universe. We're not in sync with the universe. And because we're not in sync with God and not in sync with the universe, we're not in sync with each other. It's disjointed. It's disunited. Another way of putting it is, we don't live in a universe. We live in a fragniverse. It's disunited. The book of Ephesians tells us that the universe has broken down. It's broken down in the spiritual realms, that's called the heavens. And there's disunity. It's broken down in the physical realms. There's disunity. In the spiritual realms, there's spiritual warfare. We can't see that. In the physical realms, there's racism. In the book of Ephesians, Jew and Gentile. Whatever it is, our whole world is disunited. But God's got a plan. He's going to unite all things. He's going to bring all things together in Jesus. Look at verse 10. As a plan for the fullness of time to unite all things in Jesus. Now look at this. Things in heaven, those are the spiritual things, and things on earth, the physical things. So let me put it to you simply. Everything is going to come together in a beautiful bliss and harmony. Let me say it again. Is it going to be okay? It's going to be okay. Everything is going to be fixed. Everything is going to come in a beautiful bliss and harmony. Where will that happen? In the United Nations? Is that where it's going to happen? Will the United Nations do it? No. It's going to happen in Jesus. God's going to do it. In Jesus. It's the thing we so badly want. Peace, harmony. What's that Australian thing? Mateship. Male, female, in harmony. Black, white, in harmony. Children, parents, in harmony. People, the environment, in harmony. A total unity of love, bliss, and joy. Not uniformity, because that's boring, but a diverse, rich unity, a tapestry of love. That's God's plan. And he's going to do all of that in Jesus. And it's not hard. What he's doing is he's reconciling people to himself through Jesus. And as they reconcile to God through Jesus, they are reconciled to each other in Jesus. Let me bring this home. This is why church is so important. This is why church is critical. Church is a picture of where the universe is going. Here is a smattering of the universe. At church, different people from different backgrounds, different ages come together in Jesus, under Jesus. And they're being brought together, one new humanity, one new diverse unity in Jesus. Now, friends, can you imagine what it's going to be like? Everyone, think, what's it going to be like living in this kind of harmony? Every hope, every dream realized. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Every time you read your child a story, or nowadays my children read me stories, and you're sitting on your bed and they lived happily ever after. What's that? It's an echo of a dream that every single person has. It's the way we want it to end. And if you don't feel it because you had too much breakfast this morning or not enough coffee, let me help you. All of our poets, all of our best poets echo this. Martin Luther King, do you remember? I have a dream of racial harmony. Or Louis Armstrong, I see a world of blue. What a wonderful world. What's he looking at? He's got a dream. There's a guy, Ennio Morricone, who writes a lot of the movie. I don't know why I bring this one up. Only I know this one, but anyway. That song, Nella Fantasia, it's an ancient Latin poem. In my fantasy, I see a fair world where everyone lives in peace and honesty. John Lennon, Bob Marley. I mean, the list goes on and on. Now, where did all those people get that dream from? Are they all on the same drugs? Well, no. Are they all genetically flawed? No. These are people who feel, people who imagine, people who long for what is missing. And you know what God says? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. But here's the part they didn't know. I'm going to do it in Jesus. In Jesus, all of God's plan is to unite all things in Him. It's the vision of our church. What's our church stand for? You know this. I hope you do. Here's our church vision. We see Jesus standing with crowds of people from Perth and beyond. They're made alive by His Spirit through the gospel. And they delighting in Him forever to the glory of God the Father. All God's grace is in Jesus. All God's purposes are achieved in Jesus. All of God's plan is to unite all things in Jesus. You know what? It really is all about Jesus. Let me close with practical. Three things. Number one, for individuals, for you sitting here this afternoon, make wise choices. There are better days ahead. That's what Scott Morrison said. So here's what he does. Scott Morrison unveils his budget. You want to be smart? Look, there's only two people in this whole church who can understand the budget, but you know, if you could understand the budget, make some wise choices. Okay, so that's Australian budget. So I must put more money in my super, and I mustn't invest in tobacco because that's going to get nailed. And I, you know, you make all these choices. I'm making wise choices with my money, my time, my investments, because I know what the plan is. As an individual, God has told you what He's going to do. So what you want to do is make wise choices. You want to get to know Jesus. You've got to know Jesus because it ends up in Him. That's the way it's all going. Hey, go with the flow. It's going to Jesus. Don't swim the wrong way. Worshiping Jesus is not an escape from reality. It's a return to reality. That's where it's going. That's for individuals. But corporately, what does this tell us as a bunch? Well, it tells us, come on, people, let's join with Jesus in trying to gather as many people together to worship Him. If that's the way it's going, what's our job? Well, gather more people. Get more people, more and more people to see Jesus. You know what we're trying to do as a church? Get this. We're trying to fix the world. Oh, that's a big ambition for such a small church. That's our ambition. We're fixing the world. One sinner at a time. Every person that comes to us and sees the value of Jesus is being built up into this new humanity. So I would beg you, join with us. Throw your lot in with us. Let's do this thing. But thirdly, I believe, and the Oversight Board believes, we should buy this building. And the reason for that is so that we can do what God is going to do. We can gather more people and preach Jesus Christ as the center of all things to His glory. I believe we ought to buy this building. And so that's why we're doing this building campaign. We're putting it before you guys, showing you that it's all about Jesus, that it's about people, and that it's about forever.